Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Boring Beige Box. Today's topic is online in the 90s. And it looks like we are starting out right at about 7:10 p.m. My name is Matt Wilson, and I'm your host this evening. And if you're listening to this after we have already recorded the show, I would like to remind you to check out our website at www.boringbeigebox.com. It has been a while since I've recorded an episode of my regular podcast. It's been a couple months. I've been busy with work and other things have come up, but I want to try to get back into it and produce some more shows. But also what I would like to do is try to transition somewhat to doing more live shows on TalkShoe. And hopefully I think it will be a better forum to meet some people that are into retro computing and would like to talk about different topics. You can send me an email. My email is podcast@boringbeigebox.com. And it's kind of a long email address. I also have a Hotmail account, mattwilson247@hotmail.com, if you want to send it there to communicate with me. Probably this show will be at random times in the evening. I would like to set it at the same time every week, but we'll see how it goes. If I get some response, I'll try to get a set schedule down. Otherwise, that's pretty much it. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm a systems administrator, and I've been working with computers for, well, ever since I was very young, but professionally for about 10 years now. For the past six years, I've been doing the same type of role as a system/network administrator, and I really love it. I enjoy computers. I love technology and everything with it. And our show, Boring Beige Box, or the podcast, it really focuses on older technology that we all loved and grew up with in the late 80s, early to mid 90s. That's kind of what we focus on and talk about. And we can talk about other stuff, other technologies, the latest stuff also. So let's go ahead and get right into tonight's topic. I'm discussing the topic of online in the 90s. What was it like to be online during this time in the early 1990s to mid-90s? And I kind of want to just talk about some of my experiences. Now, I've done this in some of my other podcasts, but I want to try to bring it to the talk show world and let everyone experience that and kind of reminisce. And hopefully I'll reach another audience that we can have an interactive forum and talking about some of the old school stuff. For me, I would say my first experience with getting online and the experience of the online world did not start, obviously. Some people, it started with the internet. Most of us older folks, if you're in your 30s or your late 20s, you experienced what was called bulletin board systems and also online services. Now, for me, I would say the first experience I had was with a IBM PS1. A friend of mine named Andy, his father had an IBM computer, and not a clone. It was a time of period when the clone machines were huge. It was around the year 1990 or 91, and it was one summer where he was an older guy. I had met him through the church we were going to, and we kind of connected, and we were buddies. And so I would go over to his house and mess with his dad's computer. And he had the Sierra Network, which was created by Sierra Online, with the Sierra company who made the great King's Quest adventure games and other games like that. And it was the Sierra Network. And basically, if some of you were familiar with it, eventually it became called the Imagination Network. It was basically an online service that provided all different kinds of games and different activities that you could do online. You could email people, you could chat with people. There was a lot of different features that you could experience. Now, hold on one second. I'm going to look at something real quick and see what we have going on here. Okay, I'm just taking a look and seeing at the show information. Looks like I made a little misspelling in the topic. Left the E off of it on the word the, but anyway, it does not matter. I need to, I wonder if they'll let you recreate the title. Anyway, sorry about that. So basically, the Sierra Network, for those of you that, if you don't remember it, go to Wikipedia, you know, www.wikipedia.org and search for the Sierra Network. It was an online service in the early 90s that had a lot of great features. Like I said, you could do basically online chatting. They had an email system. There were all different kinds of LANs that you could visit. There was one called, my favorite was, which was rolled out later on, which was called Adventureland. Medieval Land. And it was online role-playing in one of its early forms. Obviously, before that, there were the MUD, multi-user dungeon, text-based online role-playing games. But there was a couple of different lands. There was the Medieval Land, there was Larry Land, there was Sierra Land, there was a few other different, you know, lands that they had. For me, Medieval Land was the best because it had a game called The Shadows of Eusebius. And this was, for me, the first multi-user, multiplayer online role-playing game. It was released in 1992 as a part of the Sierra Network. Now, they had a couple sequels to that called The Fates of Twinian and The Ruins of Kaldor. I remember playing Shadows of Eusebius and maybe a little bit of Fates of Twinian. I didn't get very far. You know, it was very different. I was very young. You know, I was young at the time. I was 92. I was 15 at the time, around 14, 15 years old. I'll be 30 next month, so this was a while back. And I remember playing that, you know, late into the evenings. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff I didn't understand, but that was pretty much my first online RPG. Now, before that, I would say kind of my computer history was when I was young in the 80s, well, you know, even going further back, when I was very young, it started off with, you know, console video game systems. We never had a computer. We couldn't really afford a computer at home. And we had a ColecoVision. So I played a lot of Coleco games. I got that in 1984. That was my first idea of some sort of interactive, sitting in front of a screen and interacting with something that was digitized and electronic in that sort of form, video game, computer, whatever. So ColecoVision was the first type of thing like that that I got in 1984. And of course, now throughout the 80s, the only computer interaction I really had with was at school with Apple IIs, which was great. I love the Apple II. I remember my earliest recollection was in third grade, and there was some sort of energy game where you would conserve energy, you would go around the house and turn stuff off, and that was on the Apple II with the green, you know, green screen, black and green screen. Love the Apple II. And there was one in every classroom, and it was very special to use those. You know, they had the big 5 1/4 floppy disks. You had to be very careful with them. It was a big deal to use those computers, and people would spend certain time using those computers during the classroom. So, and some of the other things I remember, of course, Oregon Trail, one of the classic games, you know, for the Apple II. I experienced that around when I was in fourth grade. And so throughout the 80s, as the home at my house, what we had, you know, we had video game systems. And there was a time around 1989, well, we went from Coleco, and we had the Nintendo, and about the time, I would say around 1989, I started to get into computers really big. At school, we progressed from Apple IIs, we had Apple II GSs, And then there were no Macintoshes. They were very expensive, and everything was Apple IIs. But then there was a shift around, I would say, 90, 91, where we had my school got a computer lab with about 11 or 12 Mac Classics. And that kind of shifted my interest. I got into Macintosh, but only for a little while. There was always this one computer over in the corner that was an IBM PC that really, really piqued my interest, because I felt like I could control it and I could get in there and get in the command line Okay, sorry about that. I think we lost our connection. So what I was talking about was basically the history of kind of my use with computers or with technology. And basically what happened was the progress was, I started with a ColecoVision, you know, went to the Nintendo, and then around the late 80s, you know, at school it was Apple IIs, Apple II GS machines, and then I would say about the time of around the late 80s, I moved into high school, and we had a Macintosh computer lab with about 12 Macs. And I got into Macintosh. I really enjoyed the Macintosh. I was amazed at what you could do with desktop publishing and, you know, writing your papers, and I even installed SimCity Classic on all the computers. So during lunch break, everyone was playing SimCity, and I think I got in trouble for that. But there was always there was one computer in the corner, which was an IBM PC clone or something like that, that no one really touched or messed with. They didn't understand how it worked. I think it was like a 286 machine. Well, that always intrigued me because I felt like I could control it. I could get into the command line and work with it and do stuff with it, and I had control over it. And but I never really understood how to use it. But about a couple of years later, they got rid of the Macs, and they had IBM PC clones. They're actually called IBM EduQuest computers that were one in every classroom. But during that time, that's when I really got bit by the computer bug, and I was determined to buy my own computer. So around 91, 92... actually, I think it was the summer of 92, I saved up and bought my first computer, which was a 386. Now, at this time, the 486 computers were hot, but they were too expensive. So I purchased a 386 machine, 386SX, 25 megahertz, with, I believe, either 2 or 4 megabytes of RAM. So it was very, very lowest I could, you know, afford, with like a 40 megabyte hard drive, which that blows people's minds today, how low amount of specs this computer was. Like the graphics card was very simple. I didn't even have a CD-ROM drive or anything. It was just the floppy disk drive. And no sound card, nothing in the monitor. And I think it was like $800. And it took me like all summer to save up for it. Now, this is at a time when I was, you know, about 15 years old. So This really took me to the next level. This is it. I had my own computer. I didn't want a Super Nintendo or any type of, you know, video game system. So at this time, you know, we're talking about being online in the 90s. And my show, the Boring Beige Box podcast, you know, we talk about, you know, the old school days and what you did when you were young and, you know, what you experienced in the early days of computers. So for me, I was at this point where, okay, I have enough money. I'm going to buy my own system. I was about 15 years old, and I was like, what to do with this computer? You know, the first thing, obviously, was games. You know, I totally enjoyed games. Oh, there's someone in here. His name's MikeSquirrel14, and he's asking, where is everyone? Well, no one is here yet. Mike, sorry, WTF. I'm just recording my episode 2, and hopefully people will join in. I'm talking about old school retro computing today, and the show is called Boring Beige Box, and I have a podcast at boringbeigebox.com, and today we're talking about being online in the 90s, what you did back in the day, what it was like, what you experienced, and I'll open it up if you guys want to call in. So anyway, basically what happened was, you know, I was at this point when I was 15 years old. I was like, you know what, I'm going to buy my own computer. And Mike asked, are you going to talk about mainframes? Nope, this is kind of a way beyond the mainframes. I was never really involved in mainframes. And I'm kind of talking about the age of late 80s, early 90s to mid 90s, when everyone had these ugly, big old, boring beige boxes sitting on their desks. So my first boring beige box was a 386 SX 25 megahertz with 4 megs of RAM, 40 megabyte hard drive, a 512K VGA card, no sound card, no CD-ROM, just the floppy disk drive, and like a 14-inch VGA monitor. And I didn't even have a modem at the time. And, you know, a couple months later, I was able to buy a modem. And I believe it was, you know, it was like a, I want to say it was a 2400 baud modem, you know, incredibly slow. And basically the things that I started out with was I used the Sierra network, you know, that had all the games and you could play online games with people like I talked about. And also had the early versions of America Online. You know, it was AOL 1.0. I remember using America Online to dial up and get wares and, you know, hacking stuff. And, you know, we never expected AOL to be what it is today. This is back when it was only, you know, a couple thousand users. And also used Prodigy, which was a horrible interface. I mean, it was all in DOS and very hard to use. And the great thing about AOL was it was a Windows base, and that was when Windows 3.1 came out, and it was much easier to navigate. You know, so I used Prodigy, CompuServe, which I thought CompuServe was all right, but it was for older, you know, older people, and there was lots of forums. And but for me, it was America Online and the Sierra Network. Now, we also used bulletin board systems, BBSs. And right now there is a phenomenal documentary called the BBS Documentary. If you go to www.bbsdocumentary.com, there's a documentary that was done by a guy named Jason Scott, who interviews, you know, tons, dozens and dozens of people that ran their own bulletin board systems, and they had you know, all these different sites or all these different BBSs that they ran and all the different stories and about the software. And so when I was young, I used, I dialed into bulletin board systems. And there was one point when I couldn't really find any good local BBSs. I grew up in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, so it was a very small town. So I had to dial in long distance BBSs. And those long-distance BBSs cost a lot of money. So one month, my parents came to me with a phone bill the size of a small textbook. And I had a phone bill for about $500. And I think exactly it was either $480 or $580. And it was pretty bad. It took me months to pay that off. And my mom was pretty upset. So no more long-distance BBS boards. So this is at a time around 1992 that, you know, BBSs were at their peak, but they were getting ready to be killed off pretty much by the internet and, you know, the web browser and web browsing. So this is a point when you know, when a lot of the BBSs were at their peak. It was around 92, 93. But there came a point around 94 or so when the internet exploded onto the scene, And a lot of BBSs became ISPs, or Internet Service Providers. They said, okay, we understand that people want to get on the Internet, which reached a much broader audience. With the BBS, you know, you could only connect to a small group of users. You were just connecting to some guy that had a server in his house with a bunch of modems and a bunch of phone lines, or even big companies that had, you know, dozens of racks of modems that you could dial into, and lots of servers and lots of hard drives to download software. A lot of that just was not profitable anymore, and people didn't want to pay for that service. So at that time, that is when a lot of these BBSs became ISPs, or Internet Service Providers, and they decided, hey, we can, you know, we can charge a monthly fee of $15 or $20 a month, and people can dial in and they can access the entire Internet. You know, they dial in and then they can jump on Netscape Navigator to go to websites, which, you know, can be anywhere in the world and be hosted on large servers. And it completely opened the world to this information and accessing information. And huge communities, little local communities became massive, you know, national or global communities. But the problem with a lot of that was that those BBSs were local communities where you could actually have relationships and friendships with people in your area. So the community became very different after the BBSs went away. I see what you're saying, Mike. This is yes, I have I've done a bunch of podcasts that you might enjoy. If you go to www.boringbeigebox.com. You can see if you click on the podcast information on that page, you can see I've done about 16 episodes. I haven't done one in a couple months, but if you want to go back and listen to the episodes, I think you'll enjoy it. And I also have a forum on there, which I originally had a forum with a good couple dozen people, but the forum was hacked and I had to rebuild it. So now really you only have like one other user on the new forum. But if you go to the website, you can get all the information. But I'm going to be doing more episodes on TalkShoe just to open up to a different audience. So basically, with the transition from bulletin board systems to the Internet, that changed a lot of the way that people connected and got online, and the definition of being online changed a lot. Mike's asking, why do I record on TalkShoe? Just to open up to a larger audience. And he says, yeah, he goes, never mind. So the idea was, you know, moving from those small communities to even larger global communities. Now, the online services like America Online and CompuServe and Prodigy, those users demanded to be, they wanted to be open to the Internet and have access through those online services to the Internet. Now, the problem was that these online services like America Online, Prodigy, CompuServe had developed specific content that their users could access. So allowing them to, it was hard for them to allow people to have access to the Internet through their service, because they didn't want those users to be taken away from the ad dollars and the, you know, the advertising and stuff like that. So really for that time period from the late 80s to mid 90s, the online services and the BBSs were on the top. And I'm kind of glad that things changed the way they did, just because of the advent of the Internet just opened you up to so much more information and communication and communities. Always when I was using America Online or Prodigy or the Sierra Network or CompuServe, it felt like there was a lot of people on. And, you know, with America Online, you had lots of chat rooms and there was interaction and, you know, you could get good software, you could play a lot of good online games. It just felt very, you know, the company America Online had a lot of, it was very specific to what they wanted to develop. When you had the Internet and websites, it was the idea that people can publish their own information and have knowledge that they wanted to share with people. It was like your little place in cyberspace. You know, you had the ability to put up your own information, and it was like power to the people. and the ability to do what you wanted. It was like the early days of the Wild Wild West, you know. And so I think that at that point, things began to shift, and the people that were not with it had online services and used online services, but the people that were with it and knew what they were doing and had more control used the internet. And my experience was, in 1995, I went off to college, and I began to see just that open access to the internet. I would go to a computer lab in the library. I went to the University of South Carolina, and there were dozens of PCs that just had a direct connection to the internet. It was a high-speed T1 line. I could get on. I could open up Netscape Navigator and go to any website I would wanted, and it was extremely fast. And no longer had to worry about the dial-up. Now, still in my dorm room, I just had dial-up, and you know, I would connect to a local internet service provider. But at that point, I began to just forget about online services like America Online, and I never dialed up to any BBSs anymore, because all those files and all that software and data, everything I wanted was on some website, you know. So there was no need for that. So that was a big shift, and you know, being online in the 90s was really shifted. And if you watch a documentary like BBS documentary, you can see how there were so many people that they knew everything about bulletin board systems. That was their life. That's what they did. And everything just changed. And a lot of people were just hobbyists, and they just pretty much, you know, gave up on it. And they just moved over to the internet and the web, and it just changed. So the one thing, though, is that I feel that is like not a good thing is when I look at stuff like an online service like the Sierra Network, they spent so much time customizing the content, providing games for you, providing interactive chat rooms and email, and everything was within one thing. You knew that when you dialed up to the Sierra Network, that was the experience you were going to have. Same thing with AOL, and same thing with Prodigy or CompuServe. But nowadays, you know, they're it's just websites. So it's how do you find this custom content that you know that's always going to be the same and have everything under one roof? And it's not always the same. It's you know, you go to multiple sites for information. You know, the only sense of community is just message boards. But lots of times it's a flood of people, thousands of people that are just you know, putting their two cents in. Like there's a community like the World of Warcraft community or different online games, and it's millions of people that just are just another number, another face in the crowd, another person on the message board. But on those online services, sometimes I would go into chat rooms and see the same people, you know, throughout the week or every other week, and you'd kind of get to know people. Nowadays, this is really weird. I've kind of noticed this, like real-time chat rooms don't really exist or aren't used as much as they used to in the days of online services. Now everything is message boards, but message boards are very static. You know, someone posts something and then, you know, hours later someone may do something, post something. You really don't always develop those connections. The only type of communities that I've seen are in online games like World of Warcraft. You know, I've been able to play on, you know, in that and have a service. There's a software called Ventrilo or TeamSpeak where you can actually talk to people on your headset while you're playing with them, and you can have adventures and do things with people and get to know people either through chatting, text chatting in the game, or either on your headset, and you can hear a bunch of people at the same time talking, or you can have a bunch of people at the same time chatting in the in-game text chat. And really, that's the only type of interaction I've seen online these days, like chat rooms in a sense. I mean, there's always IRC, but, you know, if you don't find a good channel or find a good, you know, area to connect with people, you know, you're really not going to find that same way of interaction. Maybe it's just because that was when I was young and the whole world was, you know, kind of like a big, you know, prize to go after or a big open area to see things. But nowadays, it just doesn't see the same. All right, well, we are wrapping it up. It's at the almost at the 30-minute mark, and we're going to close it out. So once again, the website is www.boringbeigebox.com, And looks like Mike is asking, do you know when you're going to be recording the next episode? Well, hopefully I'll be recording another one on TalkShoe pretty soon, probably next week or later this week, maybe this weekend. And as far as the podcast episodes, I don't know if I'm going to continue those. I may just switch completely over to TalkShoe, but I will. I'll post some information on the message boards on the website. Well, that about does it. Thanks so much, everyone, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This show is brought to you by TalkShoe.
Create your own internet talk show. Check it out at TalkShoe.com.